Hello. I am, this is episode 4, and I'm back at my kitchen table with John Sutherland again. He was on episode 1 talking about Born to Run, and now we're here to talk about kind of an interesting thing that he has going on this year. He has signed up to run the Angeles Crest 100 in October this year, and we've got some interesting things planned around this leading up to the AC 100. John, you want to say hi?
Hey, yeah, I'm John, and I'm happy to be back. Thanks for having me back. It's fun to get together and chat. Yeah, lots of fun stuff coming up this summer.
Yeah. So on Angeles Crest, John first attempted to run the Angeles Crest 100 back in 2022, and unfortunately, that attempt ended in a DNF. He was timed out, I think. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. He made it went about 50 miles in.
Yeah. I was about 40 minutes late to mile 50.
Man. Tough. But it was a tough day. And actually, there is a documentary on that, on his 2022 race. It's good. I would suggest watching it. I'll put a link to that YouTube documentary on the page where this podcast will be. So he's back in 2026 to try again. He's gonna get it done. He's already pretty fit this year, and we have some things planned to kind of lead up to the Angeles Crest 100. We are planning to kind of do like a series of podcasts leading up to it. This is the first in a little series, and each episode will be kind of like a update on how like fitness is going, and kind of talk about like key runs that he will do in the coming months. And this episode is coming after the first kind of big key run that he had this year. Back in early June, he did Helen's Vert Challenge this year, which is an interesting event. We'll talk about that in a second. So the first thing that we're doing is we'll have a couple podcasts leading up to the race, and then on race day, there will be another documentary filmed following his race. So don't have a full timeline of when that documentary will actually come out, but that'll kind of be the big finale on this. It's going to be fun. We're excited about it. John's going to have a whole crew go out to AC 100. A lot of us local Santa Barbara trail runners are going to go out there and just have a really fun day. And then also the months leading up to that, we're going to have some fun, big training days, and we're going to get him back on the podcast here to talk about that. So here on the first episode, we're going to, talk about John's experience at the 2026 Vert Challenge in early June. John, do you want to kind of explain what the Vert Challenge is?
Yeah. So the Vert Challenge, I believe this is the third year that we've had it. To my memory, it kind of started as Helen needing a training run, mm-hmm. and wanted to do something overnight. And so from that, it became just more people got interested and became an event. And it was a free unofficial race, but was able to be supported if you wanted to donate to Runners for Public Lands. Mm-hmm. She had that option. So it's turned out now to be an awesome way for people to come together and give back a little bit also. And the main event is Sunday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. You run 3 hours on our Power Lines trail, and you just collect as much vert as possible, do as many laps as you can up and down.
Yeah.
And there's also a 24-hour from Saturday at 10 a.m. till Sunday at 10 a.m. Same goal, just run as much vert as possible.
Yeah.
So, in a nutshell.
Yeah. It's a great event. Usually, well, once the event concludes on Sunday morning at 10, there's like a potluck-style kind of post-race kind of brunch or lunch type thing hosted at Patty Bryant's house. She's just a local Santa Barbara Trail legend, I would say. She's done some pretty cool things in the trail running world. But yeah, she hosts this a potluck after, and it's just a lot of fun. Really great event for the community. John and I have both been at it every year so far. This was year three. John has run every year. I ran the first year, kind of did the overnight support on the second year, and then this year I did like my own version of it. I did the 12-hour overnight run, and yeah, just a lot of fun and a really great event. And but this year there was kind of an added challenge to a 24-hour event. John, do you want to talk about what the added thing was this year?
Yeah, so this year was the addition of the Everest goal, and I think we had talked about it in previous years. I remember back when we had Clancy the first year running, he had talked about it with some folks too, and it's kind of just been sitting there, and we didn't do anything the second year. And then, as far as I know, Will had the idea this year to make a belt buckle to kind of incentivize people to do an Everest day, which would be climbing 29,000 feet of vert in 24 hours.
Yeah. Which is crazy. It's crazy. I mean, that's a lot of vert in 24 hours. Yeah. So, yeah, that was an interesting thing. Like, kind of additional goal that pretty much everybody had this year. I think everybody that was doing the 24-hour was really going after that Everest challenge. Climb 29,000 feet in that 24 hours. That was the goal. And John went after it hard. So we're here to just like talk about how the day went. Did you have a strategy going into this?
So I actually didn't really think that it was possible.
Yeah.
To do the Everest. I think a lot of us kind of wanted to swing for it, and everybody was kind of curious about seeing what's possible.
Yeah.
I just love being at the event and being with friends. And I definitely knew that my A goal was to finish the 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have much of a strategy, to be perfectly honest, until about 8:30 in the morning on Saturday. Will called me on the way before we were both about to drive up. And he started talking about maybe his strategy of going to the steepest section and doing repeats exactly on that section. And I had thought about it a little bit before, and then I thought maybe it'd be fun to just do all the way up, all the way down, do a little bit more mileage. But it sounded fun to hang out with Will and just do that steep section and just give it a shot and see how much it's different, you know. So we kind of knew what it would be like to climb. The first year we climbed lots of different trails during the day and then just power lines at night.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, the second year, we did more just up and down power lines. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of fun to do something different. But it was definitely a late development for me to just be doing repeats on that steep section.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like one particular section of the trail that's like at the very top. And it's very steep. But it's only like maybe a third of a mile or something, that one steep section.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's like a 0.3 mile section, and it's like a couple hundred feet of elevation gain just crammed into it. So it's like you're basically like power hiking up and then just like trotting down, trying not to fall.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. So it seems like pretty much everybody started, kind of went in on that strategy and just started, like, from the beginning, it seemed like, just started doing repeats on that super steep section, just really trying to, like, be as, like, efficient as possible with their time and their effort to just cram as much, like, vert as you really possibly could on that trail. So, yeah. Pretty interesting. Yeah, how hard was that to just do that same, like, 0.3 mile segment over and over?
It was pretty fun. I've done a couple things now that, you know, short loop courses out and backs.
Yeah.
And I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
In some way, I don't have to, it takes a lot of the thinking out of it. Partially, I love having all of my supplies close.
Yeah.
So we had our own little aid station, just rucked a backpack up there with all my supplies, and you had everything you needed really close.
Yeah.
It was also fun because we had so many people in a small area. We got to see everybody constantly, yeah. And so we got to have lots of conversations, yeah. And some people were running slightly longer versions or the full thing, mm-hmm. So you'd see people for different amounts of time, and mm-hmm. It's fun to catch up briefly and then talk to somebody else, so...
Yeah.
In that way, I think the time passed really quickly and easily for the most part, and
yeah.
It's just fun to be out there.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you have, like, a strategy of, like, trying to hike the uphills, jog the downhills, or did you kind of just do, like, whatever felt good in the moment, like run sometimes, hike sometimes, whatever?
Yeah, so definitely. Okay. So I'm a poles guy.
Yeah.
And so I had poles. I ended up poles the entire 24 hours. So I would power hike up or hike up. Yeah. I don't know how much power there was all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And I was jogging a lot more, and knowing that as the day went on and into the night, I'd probably slow down a bit.
Yeah.
So I was trying to jog the downs as much as I could in the beginning,
yeah.
And then it slowed down a lot going overnight, and things always get interesting, things change, your body reacts differently after the sun goes down and after midnight and in those early hours, so
I wonder how did you feel throughout the time, like because it was a full 24 hours of, I mean, it was 24 hours of just going. I wonder, like, at what point did it start to get hard, and like when those, like, low points started? Because I guess, so I'm thinking about this in terms of running Angeles Crest 100 later this year, where it's a 100-mile race. Like, you're gonna need a good amount of endurance, and that course has a lot of climbing, like uphill, downhill, so really this vert challenge I think was probably a good stimulus for, like, getting your climbing legs trained up. So how did it feel to be doing that much climbing and descending for a long time?
Like, yeah, that was another goal that I had, was to just get at least 20,000 feet of climbing in, because that's the Angeles Crest number.
Mm-hmm.
So it was important that I did get that much in to give me confidence to be able to do Angeles Crest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually had a pretty good day. It wasn't super hot. It was a little bit humid. So, you know, there was a lot of, I was sweating a lot. So hydration was super important.
Yeah.
And, but overall the day went really well. When it did warm up and the sun came out, I did start using some ice bandanas.
Mm-hmm.
Just only, I guess this year I didn't take very many trips back to our main aid station.
Yeah.
So only once I had the ice bandana, but it helped a lot. And during that midday, it was kind of a brief little, I don't know, what do you call it, a like a little heat.
Yeah, a little heat spell or something.
Heat spell, exactly.
Yeah, the clouds parted and the sun came out.
And then it was time for ice.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that helped a lot. But mostly through the day, everything felt good. The body kept feeling good. The jogging was fine. And then, you know, walking downhill was okay. Mm-hmm. But I did a lot better than I thought. Things felt better. And I didn't have any stomach issues, no nausea or anything from the heat. Yeah. Really no problems for the first like 15 or 18 hours, which was pretty great for me.
Yeah. I mean, that would bring you into the nighttime, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember like I got there, I started my 12 hour run at like 10 PM. So it was already dark at that point. Mm-hmm. I think by the time I saw you, like you were still looking like pretty strong, honestly. That was probably like, you know, you would have been like almost 13 hours in probably by the time I saw you. And you're still like moving pretty well. Had spirits were high. Like seemed like you were doing pretty good. But then, like, yeah, maybe a few hours later, like, started slowing down a little bit. Things seemed to get a little bit tougher. Yeah. I think at one point when I got up to the top, I saw you had, I mean, I think, well, for a while, I think you had gone, the shirt had come off, and you were just totally shirtless in the middle of the night. And I think I came up on you, and you were basically laying on the ground. No shirt, laying on the ground, trying to get a little sleep or something. Yeah. I was like, hey, John, how are you doing? And you're just like, I'm okay, just trying to get a little shut-eye or something like that, like taking a quick dirt nap. But it seemed like you were starting to struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, there was a time in there I started feeling a little off. Maybe, I don't know if it's dizziness necessarily, but just kind of a little bit of a dizzy-ish feeling. Yeah. Sometimes if you haven't had enough calories or just your eyes are tired, you've been walking for a long time.
Yeah.
So I was starting to feel maybe as early as like 1 a.m., 12 or 1, I started feeling a little bit. But definitely by the 1 to 2 a.m., it was pretty bad. And I thought I could get away with just one, like, 5-minute nap.
Yeah.
And then I'd be good to go.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing that probably 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Trying to go up there and just, like, lay down, shut my eyes for a little bit, try to sleep.
Yeah.
And then get up and go again. Mm-hmm. So I would ask Will just, you know, after he did one full lap, if he could wake me up, yeah. Make sure I was awake.
Yeah.
But I didn't actually, I don't know if I fell asleep at all.
Yeah.
But
trying to rest just a little bit.
Yeah. So it was no problem. I wasn't in any danger of sleeping for 2 hours or something. Yeah. Missing a bunch of time.
Yeah. So you were like actually feeling sleepy and like,
yeah,
like you needed to get some sleep. Cause yeah, once that sleepy feeling hits you, it's pretty hard to like shake it off and keep going. It's like that sleep deprivation hole starts, it only gets deeper. Yeah. And it can be hard to have the energy to really keep going if you're just super sleepy. But I wonder if also, was it a little bit of like a bonky feeling too? Like did you start to just feel like a lack of energy or something? Or
yeah,
like as if maybe you needed some like more carbs or something like that.
I think so. And because I took up a small backpack at the beginning, and I only had gone back once before sunset to get more supplies.
Yeah.
And so I was actually running out of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so the things, you know, like root beer was working well, vitamin water was working well, Pringles worked well. Yeah. I had some things that were going down well and like giving me energy.
Yeah.
And then I ran out of a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And we had some gallons of water and that was getting low. So I think there was also some stress.
Yeah.
And we started wondering if we were going to run out of everything. And when you start getting to that point where you're pretty tired and you're starting to bonk a little bit, you're not in the like in a normal mindset.
Yeah.
And so you feel just kind of trapped.
Yeah.
And it didn't really occur to me that I could just go get more supplies. I just felt like I had to stay up there. I felt a lot of pressure on myself.
Yeah.
to just stay there and hammer it out and see if I could stay all the way to the morning then, because I had missed, I was planning to go right at sunset for a second aid restock, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think I was still, you know, we're all competitive people.
Yeah.
Even though it's fun and we're just hanging out and enjoying the time, I still didn't want to lose too much time when everybody else was going to keep gaining it. So
yeah, right.
That pressure led me to kind of make a mistake with underfueling.
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually I was rescued probably around the 3 a.m. hour. You might have been there at that point.
Yeah, I think so. I think basically, I think Helen came up and basically just convinced you. She was like, you got to go back and like resupply. Like, this is, you're going to end up just totally bonking up here. We're going to have to carry you down or something.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, I think basically everybody decided to go back down.
Will didn't go.
Or, oh, yeah, maybe Will stayed up. Yeah.
Will is unbelievable.
Yeah, that dude's crazy.
Super prepared, and he stayed out there the whole time.
Yeah.
He only had one aid station restock.
Wow.
The whole 24 hours.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you did end up going back resupplying, and maybe took a little bit of a rest. I can't really. Did you like?
No.
Oh yeah.
That at that point, so then it was like three or four. It was, I think it was three something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to remember that detail.
Yeah.
But I remember just feeling so relieved when I saw Helen come up, and when she told me like, "Hey, you need to go back, or this is the best thing to do," I was so relieved. Like, I started crying a little bit. I was just so relieved that somebody had kind of given me permission to go do what I needed to go do, which was just restock. And then she ran down with me, and we ran down the whole time. Like, I barely hiked at all down there, so we were still moving pretty good.
Yeah.
And then Esther was awesome. Helen must have called her, and she made some like hot potatoes, and that was amazing. So I ate a plate of potatoes down there and drank up a little bit and got some more supplies. Maybe 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long it's down there again. It's hard to
tell,
and I wasn't clocking it with my watch or anything. I was just like, I'm just going to do what I need to do and then get back up, and then Sophia was able to walk me up, and I just hiked back up all the way.
Yeah.
And then, so when I was leaving the aid station, the sun was coming up, so I didn't need my headlamp.
Yeah.
So that's the time of day it was.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a little later in the morning.
Yeah, nice. At that point, did you feel kind of like revitalized? Like you could start hammering it again? Or did it take a little bit of time to kind of get the train rolling?
It definitely took time.
Yeah.
Walking up there, because you were
probably nearly 17, 18 hours in, probably, or maybe more, actually, like maybe close to 19, 20 hours.
Yeah.
In. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're probably just feeling the overall fatigue at that point. Probably, like, no matter how much fueling or rest you like allowed yourself, you've just been going for so long. So
the nice thing was just the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So when the sun comes up, that's like one of my favorite experiences with ultra running, is getting to run through the night, and then when the sun comes up, it's just amazing how your body changes and comes back to life.
Yeah, it's like a natural energy boost or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that took away, so from that point I didn't have any more worries about falling asleep.
Yeah.
And that was a nice thing.
Yeah.
Everything else was still there. Yeah. You still had to catch back up with calories and hydration and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice that I wasn't feeling like I needed to pass out.
Yeah.
So, and it did definitely take, I didn't get another energy boost, a big one, until the 3-hour race started.
Oh, yeah.
But I was able to walk up there and then keep doing laps, join back up with Will and keep going.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I guess that's probably, in terms of like prepping yourself for AC 100, that's probably a good like kind of practice round in a way to like just do a 24-hour long effort and just kind of experiment with like how you're able to handle that amount of time of just being on your feet going. You know, I mean, obviously AC100 is not going to be just doing hill repeats on the same thing over and over and over. It's like a 100-mile trail race. But still, like, just good for the sake of, like, time on feet, kind of.
Yeah.
So,
I think
probably good in that way. Kind of helps get your mind kind of, lets your mind wrap around, like, what it's going to be like come race day.
Yeah.
Right,
the timing is a little different. Starting at 10 a.m. versus Angeles Crest will be a 5 a.m. start.
Oh, yeah, true.
So I'll be a little more tired by the time the night sections come around.
Yeah.
But I'll have pacers at that point.
Yeah.
But it is good to know that you can, you know, you get through the day, you work through the heat, you take it easy, and make sure that you stay energized and that nothing bad happens. It's damage control all day.
Yeah.
And then when the sun goes down, when it gets a little cooler, I think it's, you know, there's an opportunity there to make sure you know, keep the pace up and stay ahead of cutoffs and everything. Hopefully we're not chasing too close to the cutoffs, but then just knowing when sunrise is going to be, and so the pacer knows how to get you through those tough hours, because I think that's, for me, it's still, those are the toughest hours, is probably the 2 to 4, 2 to 5 a.m. But if we can figure out how to get through those, I'm going to test some more caffeine strategies, and I tried 5-hour energy for the first time on the Vert Challenge, which I don't think I drank it in too small of increments. It didn't hit me the way I had hoped it would. So there's still more learning to be done.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think once the 3-hour challenge started, seemed like you kind of got another little energy boost from that, because then that's what most of the participants, that's what most people do, is the 3-hour one. Yep. On Sunday morning, so the last 3 hours of the 24-hour challenge, and there's like a lot of people who are there, probably like at least 30 to 40 people doing it. So all of a sudden you're seeing a bunch of people, probably like another like natural energy boost, kind of.
For sure.
Yeah. Did that get you moving a little bit?
It did.
A little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. In years past, I had started with the 3-hour runners at the gate. And I remember the first year I started walking with people, but then just having energy from friends being there, I started running, and I was able to run kind of hard at some points. And the kind of the same thing happened. We stayed up on that steep section just to keep getting the vert. But it was actually nice because I got to see people even more often because they were coming up and down, and I was just doing those repeats.
Yeah.
So I would hike up with somebody and then run down with somebody else, and then hike up with somebody else, because there was people kept coming.
Yeah. People are all over the trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But definitely once we saw new faces come up in the morning, I started feeling much better.
Yeah.
And then I started jogging again. Then I was definitely like running the downs.
Yeah. And so I think at some point you had kind of gotten a little bit like you thought you had kind of fallen back on the Everest goal a little bit, like it might not happen. But then somewhere close to the end, I think you were doing some runner math and realized, oh, you might actually be able to still hit this if you keep like a certain pace or something going. I wonder, like, at what point you realized that, like, and did that, like, cause you to start, like, pushing harder?
Yeah. It was super late.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, I was still walking when people started the 3-hour. So definitely with 3 hours left, I wasn't thinking it was going to happen. Will and I had some conversations about if we don't make it in the 24 hours, we could still do this thing.
Yeah. Because you're still really close at that point.
Right, we were probably over 25,000 at least.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, I was, it's a little hazy, but I kind of remember thinking like 27 or 28 would be possible in the 24-hour mark. And then we thought, okay, well, we could go finish the rest after the race is over. It'd still be kind of fun to Everest.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember what changed after that, but when we got to the 2-hour mark, it seemed a little bit closer, and I was surprised that I was as close as I was.
Yeah.
And then the last hour and a half, and yeah, definitely the last hour, it got kind of intense. Mm-hmm. Like I started running hard.
Yeah.
And the body still felt really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, leading into the end of it, I was running the downs like pretty fast. I don't know how accurate GPS is, but I definitely looked at the watch and it said like 6-something was like my pace going downhill for a little bit.
Yeah, wow.
And then I'd turn around and then I started running up as much as I could before I had to hike again.
Yeah.
And then it was just get the poles, move in and find a groove.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was wild. And then Shane started kind of really pumping me up at the end, and there was a little group there for that last hour. Yeah. And it was crazy just having people running with me and cheering me on, and having that moment somewhere in that within the last hour of like, oh my gosh, this could happen, and then at some point like, this is gonna happen.
yeah it's like you just gotta keep moving and you'll make it,
right?
That's crazy. That's awesome.
And you had to, I don't know, I couldn't stop moving fast.
Uh-huh.
I had to keep pushing hard.
Yeah.
But it was doable.
Yeah.
And there was no injury. The weird thing that had happened is I had knee pain from like hour 3. Like, whoa, 3 hours into the race, I had knee pain.
Yeah.
And it just never got worse, so I just kept going. And then it was still like there lingering a little bit.
Yeah.
But then it was, you know, the adrenaline helped at the end, but I was able to keep running up and down.
Yeah.
Wow. To the end of it. So it was kind of wild how the energy comes back and the body comes back around, and you just going as fast as you can. And but it was an amazing experience. I hadn't experienced anything like pushing that hard, that far into any effort.
Yeah.
And it was pretty fun.
yeah. So you got your Everest. I think you ended up with like 30,000 feet of climbing, something around there. Do you remember?
Yeah, so we Ricky was with me when we finished it. We were doing that last lap together, and I cleared it by, I can't remember if it was 12 minutes, maybe, or 18 minutes.
Yeah.
So I had the 29.032 happened just before, you know, within 20 minutes of...
Yeah.
That 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then after the 24 hours was done, Will was super close.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I want to get this thing, let's get the Everest done.
Yeah.
And so we went back down and did some laps.
Yeah.
Well,
that's cool. You decided like, I'm just going to keep going with Will and help him get his too.
Oh yeah.
Dang. Yeah. True friend there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have done it anyway, but like at Born to Run, when he like stayed with me at the end and walked me in when I was torn up.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to have friends there. Yeah. So it was kind of great to get to have another experience like that, where the same group of people are there, and you know, we finished it off and he got his Everest too.
Yeah.
And so after, I think we did 26 hours and ended up with 29 and 30 respectively of gain, and
pretty cool.
So it was pretty fun. So now we have 2 matching belt buckles.
That's cool.
Lots of good memories.
That's amazing. Like, pretty cool that you did that. And I mean, I think that's pretty good training for AC 100. Like, it was early enough. Like, that was, the Vert Challenge was in early June, and AC 100's like early October, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, plenty of time to, like, kind of recover after that and then still have some more good training after in the next couple months or so before it's taper time into AC100. I feel like the vert challenge was probably good training stimulus as far as getting those hiking legs going, like hiking legs and just time on feet. Also, I feel like maybe there was some learnings there of like, okay, like fueling is important. Like taking a little bit of some breaks can be important too. Like that, you know, even though it feels like maybe you're losing time in that moment, like, you know, it allows your body to have a little bit of a reset. And like now it like further solidifies at that certain time range of like that 2 to 2 a.m. just before sunrise time. Like that's a hard time for you. So like you can kind of mentally prep for that. Maybe we can come up with some like, I don't know, like strategies to use to like keep yourself engaged and keep going. So like I feel like there's some good learnings from the Vert Challenge.
Oh yeah.
In addition to just the accomplishment of getting the Everest, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the fueling thing is maybe the biggest thing I learned is just how much I need to eat. Because it's when I'm in a race, you know, it's 5 miles or 10 miles between an aid stations, and you know, I'm maybe having a gel, maybe a couple gels if I'm lucky, you know, and then I fuel up at the aid station.
Yeah.
But when I was kind of thinking about it here, every, you know, half mile, I was snacking on something.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about a major difference. You know, if I were to take a geller, I'd have a little bit of potatoes or something. But if I'm doing it every half mile, I need to figure out how to translate that into when I'm running, not at an aid station, just out of using my pack.
Yeah.
You know, how can I be better about eating? Probably every half mile might be my my new like benchmark. I'll just some people set a timer, you know, every 30 minutes they try to eat or something. Maybe I do it by mileage, maybe I make sure every half mile or something. But those things are invaluable, I think, too. Because everybody's different, you know, with how much you need to eat, how much you need to drink, salts, what goes down well. So I feel like I'm learning a lot about what works for me, and yeah, obviously that's going to be very helpful.
Yeah. The fueling thing is like, that can be game changing if you like kind of unlock it, like figure it out and make some breakthroughs. Like that can be a huge, like advancement in how well you feel during one of these crazy, like 100-mile races.
Right. It feels like that we've learned a lot in the past few years with pro athletes, these elite runners. And they started eating way more, and times are dropping like crazy. And we can't, you know, I'm not going to fuel the same way that Jim Walmsley fuels. But as a, just a
kind of trickles runner, down there.
You're just realizing, hey, you can eat more and probably have better results. You'll feel better. You'll have more energy. And it's just more than I expected.
It's crazy. Like, I mean, the amount of calories that you're burning in one of these events, especially if it's like a hot day, and AC100 most likely will be pretty hot, I would think.
Not as hot as August, but it'll still be hot.
Hopefully. Like, you'll just burn so much calories, and it's just like nearly impossible to like keep your, like to take in enough calories to make up for what you're burning. It's a lot. But, you know, you do what you can. And so I think Vert Challenge is a pretty cool accomplishment. Get the Everest. Take away, you know, some key like learnings to take away, and you take them with you. And and now it's time to buckle down into some more training. I think
it came at a nice time. I think the next training run is I'm hoping to do in August. And so I have about the same amount of time between the Vert Challenge and this next run as I will from the August run to Angeles Crest. So I'm kind of getting a simulation now of, it took me at least 2 weeks to really recover from Vert Challenge. And now I'm trying to ramp up a little bit, and then I'll do another hard long race.
the
tune-up. Yeah. And then if that works well, I'll have a nice new pattern, probably give myself 2 weeks, you know, of easy recovery, and then ramp up again, and then pull back a little bit.
Yeah.
Be nice and rested.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's kind of episode one of this little series of things that we're doing, going into AC 100. Looking forward to kind of like seeing how your training goes. I know you've got like a couple big runs planned in the next couple months, and we'll get you back on to talk about them and see how they go and how your fitness is like progressing, how you're feeling. I think it's gonna be fun.
No, for sure. Thanks for doing these. It'll be fun to keep posting updates and have all of this. It's been a wild ride, and it's an exciting year, so I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? Also, I was going to forgot to mention, you wrote up a nice blog on the Vert Challenge. I believe it's kind of in the works of getting published right now, but when it does get published, I will put a link to that blog, to John's kind of recap of the Vert Challenge. I'll put a link to that on the same page where this podcast will be posted on my website, so you can read it. I'm interested to read it. I think it'll be good. He'll go into a little bit more of a deep dive into the whole event. I guess we'll end it there, and we'll have him back on after some other big runs in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Fun.